Please silence all electronic devices.
I think there are lots of things we could do that would be better than herding a bunch of people into a crowded building for a couple of days straight. I sure wouldn't want to be one of those people that's forced to sit there for 16 hours taking the test.
Part of the question with this, I think, is that many law school graduates are waiting and employment opportunities are contingent upon them passing the bar.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the mounds of Meshware, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along. July 24th, 2020. It's a Friday, and time yet again to review the week in state politics. Much of the conversation today about pandemic-related topics, from whether or not to conduct the bar exam to Capitol Hill, where we learned that that Republican National Convention already moved is being rolled back. Here for the discussion and some analysis are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hey there.
Good day, folks.
Hey there.
We're convening on a Zoom call late Thursday afternoon. So many various pandemic-related notes. Wake County, the largest public school district in the state, will go all remote learning for at least the first 9 weeks of the academic year. The UNC system will not require SAT or ACT test scores for 2021 applicants. It will require full tuition, however. The governor admonished mask deniers. Hundreds of people are readying to take the bar exam at the state fairgrounds next week. And some notable relief, federal unemployment and a halt on utility shutoffs is set to expire. What is the most unnerving thing for you on the COVID front right now?
Well, it has to be that we, as I think as Dr. Fauci said something to the effect today, that we're not winning this game. It's not going well. America is now the home to the most infections in the world. North Carolina is far from the worst state, but things are not trending in the right direction here. We want to see a situation in which it's trending down so we can get back to life as normal. And unfortunately, because I think we have prematurely reopened, we did it months ago, we should have more shut down things more aggressively right from the start. Now we're in this really bad situation where we just can't get a control of the virus, and it's affecting every aspect of life.
I think how schools are going to open is the most pressing thing for me this week as I look at it. We have some school systems that have decided what they're going to do, at least temporarily. Others are still trying to figure out the best way to go with it, and you have hundreds of thousands of families across North Carolina, students really grappling with this, quite anxious, as we certainly would expect. And that's really my biggest concern right now is what is this going to look like, not only short term, but long term, and the long term effects on this, particularly on children that we're concerned with under the best of circumstances, low income, disadvantaged kids, kids that have special challenges, homeless students.
So I'm going to pivot that bar exam set to take place in Raleigh. In several large spaces at the fairgrounds. Can that not be delayed or done in another setting? You, Rob, are a lawyer. Is this really the best option to move forward with this thing?
I think the folks who are raising questions about it raise some really strong questions. I've taken and passed two bar exams in two different states. I have questions, frankly, about their utility more generally, but there are plenty of states that have delayed it, that have postponed it or are canceling it. Some states are just moving to a position where if you've passed, if you've graduated from an accredited law school, we're going to at least give you preliminary approval to practice in our state. I think there are lots of things we could do that would be better than herding a bunch of people into a crowded building for a couple of days straight. I sure wouldn't want to be one of those people that's forced to sit there for 16 hours taking the test.
Part of the question with this, I think, is that many law school graduates are waiting and employment opportunities are contingent upon them passing the bar. And so to delay it for a number of months means that those law school students would not be able to have employment under the contracts or the conditions that are out there. I think that's one of the big concerns with that.
Let's talk elections and yet another thread that is related to the coronavirus. The NAACP has asked a judge, Wake County, to ban touchscreen voting in 2020. In a legal filing Wednesday, the organization says voters are being forced to, quote, choose between their right to vote, their health, and potentially their lives, close quote. About one-fifth of the counties in our state use some form of touchscreen voting. Becky, should these screens be prohibited this fall?
I don't think so. I think that really is going a bit too far. I mean, and we have some experience to base that on. You know, we have people that have been shopping in Walmart and Lowe's and grocery stores for months. And to my knowledge, no one has caught COVID from using a touchscreen. I think as long as the cleaning facilities and the protocols are put in place, it seems to me that it could be safe enough so that widespread touchscreen voting could be available. And particularly when you look at all of these county governments, county election boards who have invested in this voting equipment as we get ready to move forward, it seems to me that this is one of those things that could be done safely and for people to have the confidence to do that. And of course, don't forget, for folks who are not comfortable with this or voting in person, we also have the absentee ballot, the absentee voting available as an option in North Carolina. I've had this for a long time.
Would you feel comfortable using that method, a touchscreen?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel comfortable using it at the grocery store. I use it at the ATM bank machine. Yes, I would.
Well, I think there's a strong argument to be made that touchscreens are a lousy way to vote to begin with. I know that, I guess, in North Carolina now, we produce a paper result from every touchscreen, but I still think they're confusing. I hope very much we move away from touchscreens just to begin with. I think they are something that's proven themselves to be more likely to be susceptible to hacking, and it's just not the way to go. Karen Brinson Bell, who's the head of the State Board of Elections, was on our radio show this week at NC Policy Watch and told us that they're going to distribute little Q-tips and there's going to be all kinds of disposable stuff, and they're very confident they can do it in a safe way. But I think the ultimate test here really is whether it really is a significant risk or not. The question is whether what voters perceive, and we want to take every possible step we can to make voters completely confident. And if there's anything that's going to cause uncertainty, cause people to have second thoughts about whether they're coming out to vote on election day, that's a bad thing.
With this issue, I think about, okay, you've got a busier polling site and you need to make sure that cleaning measures are in effect. But you have, just round number, you have 3,000 people that are trying to vote there throughout the day or during a stretch of a day. What does that do for lines? What does that do for voter enthusiasm? Does anybody potentially leave? So I'm going to, I guess, use that as a pivot to also mention the State Board of Elections this week basically looked at every county in the state and said, hey, your early voting plans, not good enough. What needs to be done from that cleanliness standpoint or from the early voting standpoint so that we are both being safe, Becky, and hopefully not dissuading anybody from casting a ballot, Rob? Becky, you can take that weird follow-up first.
I mean, you know, that's a concern. I mean, we want to make sure that the public is safe to the extent that we can. I mean, understand, nothing is risk-free. There is a risk every time you leave your house. But, you know, having said that, I think that we do, you know, to Rob's point, I think people do need to have confidence in the safety and also the integrity of our voting system. Now, we are going to, or at least every indication is, that we will have record numbers of people voting in November. People are engaged. They're interested in the election. They want to come out and support their candidate or vote against the candidate they don't like, whatever the case may be. So I think the notion and planning ahead for record numbers of people voting, I think that's realistic, and I think that it's something that we should do. And again, for people who are uncomfortable with voting in person, for whatever reason that may be, voting by mail is an option in North Carolina that we can take advantage of as well. And don't forget, we've got, gosh, I don't remember the number of days. I want to say 17 early voting days, some on weekends, some are extended hours, you know, all of those kind of things. So there's lots of options there. But again, nothing is risk-free, and there's no guarantee that when you go to the poll that there's not going to be a line. I think we all need to be prepared for that and be realistic.
Well, the reality is we could have done a lot more. We still could do more to make the election a lot easier for people, a lot more voter friendly. We could have made the voting by mail situation a lot easier. We could have just put prepaid postage on the darn things when people mail them in. We could have done away with this witness requirement that only 12 states have. We could have made voter registration a lot easier. There's a lot of stuff we could do to make it easier for people to vote. And that goes for in-person voting as well. I mean, the reality of what the Board of Elections is now resorting to, they've got a new program they're calling, I guess, their Heroes program, and they're literally trying to recruit people to be, you know, superheroes to come out and work in the polling stations because they realize a lot of people are not going to want to do it. And the usual cadre of people who work the polling stations tend to tilt later in the chronological spectrum. We tend to get older folks who work there. They're going to be harder to recruit. We don't have enough money to pay people what we ought to pay them for devoting an entire day to it. So they're sort of resorting to begging people right now, which is, you know, I'm sure we'll get some admirable volunteers, but it bespeaks the fact that we haven't really invested the kind of resources that we could have. The reason we're not putting postage on the return ballots is because the legislature didn't give them enough money to do it. I mean, that's such an obvious thing we should have done. So there's a lot of more steps we should be taking to make voting a lot more voter friendly.
But there's always, you know, there's always more things. There could always be the argument made, you know, to Rob's point about, you know, paying everyone's postage for people that can afford to put the postage on their mail. I mean, why would you take taxpayer money to pay for those kind of things? I mean, let's be realistic about, you know, what is necessary, what steps are necessary, what is really necessary, and also keep the cost of things in mind. I mean, this seems ludicrous to me.
Now, what's ludicrous is that this is the most important thing we do as a democracy. And
so pay for a stamp.
And we're not going to make it easy for people to vote for a couple lousy million bucks. That it's hardly anything it would cost.
You know, put a stamp on your envelope and mail it in.
Not everybody has them anymore.
Let me try to find the middle on this. Becky might not like this suggestion, but I'm going to try to find the middle. Is there, would you both support postage being waived if it's a ballot that's coming in? So we don't even, just remove the issue of a stamp. Doesn't cost anything. You drop it in the mail, it gets to where it needs to go. I realize there's a cost associated with delivering it, but how would you feel about waiving the cost of sending that particular parcel? Rob's in favor of it. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, whatever we can do to make this easy for people. I mean, we ought to be thinking of every possible way at this moment, this unprecedented crisis. How can we possibly make it easy and convenient for people to vote?
And there certainly should and could be some hardship waivers to that. You know, whether that's to take your ballot to a designated place, or, you know, to have some kind of waivers on it. Absolutely. If you were unable to pay for that, I don't think that should certainly be a deterrent for somebody to vote.
On the campaign fundraising front, many legislative candidates were touting hefty war chests this week. In total, millions were donated. That's just in the first half of 2020. Some lawmakers, state legislative candidates, have hundreds of thousands of dollars cash on hand. And remember, state lawmakers earn about $14,000 a year. Your friendly reminder here, very high stakes with the next round of redistricting looming. Not an absolute, but certainly one of the themes of this campaign fundraising cycle were Democrats outraising their Republican counterparts. Rob, how optimistic are you right now, late July, that Democrats will be able to reclaim one or both chambers at the General Assembly?
I don't know about me personally. I think that the Democrats wish and think that they can and wish the election were today. They need, what is it? They need, I'm looking at my notes here, 5 seats to take over the Senate and 6 in the House. So they clearly think that this is their year. If they can't do well when they've got this troubled man in the White House who is who's been such an abysmal failure, especially with respect to the virus and the pandemic, you know, I don't know when they can do well. So obviously they think they're going to do well. They've raised a lot of money. I'd say a huge majority of it is just anti-Trump money. They're against anything. If you're for Trump, we're against you. And that goes for, it's not just Democrats. There's a lot of Republicans raising a lot of money to oppose Donald Trump as well. And the people that support him, you know, talk about the Lincoln Republicans, I guess they call themselves. So the Democrats have raised a lot of money, but my gosh, the Republicans have tons of money as well. Senator Berger, Speaker Moore have huge money in their war chests. There's going to be no shortage of money. Plus, then there's all the dark money that's going to be spent by both sides. And it's all going to be online because we're not going to have much flesh pressing in the next couple months. So won't be any shortage of money spent by either side for the 2020 election.
Rob's exactly right. There's no shortage of money. And don't forget, North Carolina is one of the most important states in the country for all of the races. We're the only state in the country that has presidential race, U.S. Senate, all of our congressional seats, all of our legislative seats and judicial seats. As a purple state and one that could go either way, there's going to be a tremendous amount of money, not only has been accumulated, but will be accumulated between now and November. And I think we've said this often, even on this podcast, if you're somebody that likes politics and likes a lot of attention, North Carolina is the place to be between now and November.
I think it really makes, once again, a pretty strong case, the situation we find ourselves in, that North Carolina really should think about switching to a system where we vote for our big statewide offices in the off year, in the off even numbered year. It's such a crowded ballot here this year that so many important races are just going to get, there's just no way that they can get the attention that they deserve and that people can focus on them in the way that they should. So there'll be a lot of important statewide offices that'll just be afterthought elections, and people will be voting for people who they really don't even know who they are.
A final word to you, Becky. Yes or no, would you be in favor of moving Council of State elections to mid-year or off-year elections?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'd be in favor of restructuring the Council of State races altogether. You know, North Carolina elects a lot of those that many states do not. I think, you know, to be honest with you, I think we elect too many of those Council of State races or positions. But that's been polled before. North Carolinians have been asked that before. Once we have the opportunity to vote for something or someone, we like to keep that. So I don't think that is something that's going to be on the table, but I would have no objections to moving those races.
Without those, we wouldn't have Greg Lindbergh. So be careful what you wish for. Finally, President Trump announced Thursday evening that components of the Republican National Convention set to take place in Jacksonville after being moved from Charlotte are canceled, noting in part that it's not the right time. This felt inevitable, yet still seems like a significant development. In effect, no convention, and the president seems to have really turned a corner this week on some of this COVID stuff. Rob, what's your read?
Well, it's sort of like President Trump said to Roy Cooper, what you said months ago. You know, this whole convention, it almost feels like it's going to distill down to Trump sort of standing and talking in the mirror at some point. But it's really a tragic situation, right? I mean, it's emblematic and really sort of a microcosm of the way the president has failed to confront the virus, to deal with it. The Democrats have been sort of soberly, if regrettably, planning a convention in Milwaukee, going slowly ahead with a virtual convention. And the Republicans under Trump's leadership have just been flailing sort of wildly. He's just winging it, just like we're doing with the virus itself. And this is just sort of emblematic of that. And it's a very sad development, I'd say.
Well, I think the changing the cancellation of the big convention was disappointing for many, but not totally unexpected. And, you know, as Rob has alluded to, the situation, the threat, where it is, it moves across the country, different things bubbling up. You know, this whole situation is changing day by day, and everybody's had to react to that. So the president assessing where the situation is in Florida. Also, you know, as we know, when you have a big convention like this, not only are there a lot of people in a convention center, but there's also people coming from all over the country. So I think he made the right decision.
President Trump also scheduled to visit the Triangle on Monday, a manufacturing plant in Morrisville. Do not expect any large crowds there. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray, senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.
Take care, guys.
Have a great weekend.
The WNC Politics podcast takes a couple of forms, as you probably know by now. On Friday, we review the week's news, and often, every other week, midweek, we drop a conversation, a longer-form discussion with somebody who lives generally in the North Carolina political world, sometimes an elected official, sometimes a strategist. Next Tuesday, you'll hear a conversation with Dr. Anthony Jackson. He's the superintendent of Vance County Public Schools. He and I had a good conversation this week, talked about what it's going to take to try to do all remote learning for at least the first 9 weeks of the year, and we addressed some of the other challenges that his district, a rural school district, is facing in the face of this pandemic. As a reminder, program reminder, you can hear much more about COVID-19 on the podcast Tested. It's co-hosted by Dave DeWitt and Leonida Inge, and it's now not only about how North Carolina is responding to the pandemic, but also how the Old North State is reacting and reforming itself in the face of this racial reckoning that's taking place across our state and really the nation as well. So that's programming reminder number one. Numero dos is to make sure you check out Creep. It is a new production from WUNC, and in the face of the pandemic, perhaps you have noticed some friends, furry or feathery, more frequently in your yard, at your house, nearby during the pandemic. Creep is all about animals and animal sightings and maybe things that are changing or maybe our changing perspectives here in these recent weeks. So check those two out, Tested and Creep, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and we will be back with you next week. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend.
Can you say W?
W.
U?
U.
N?
N.
C?
C.
Bye.
Bye.